Welcome to Book Squad Goals.
Hello.
Hello, thank you for welcoming me.
This is Mary, and I will be leading us today through the novel The Memory Police by Yoko Ogawa.
Yay. Mm-hmm.
But to start us off, in the theme of the novel, what would you be happiest to see disappear from your life mysteriously?
Who's going first? I'll go first. I was having a hard time thinking of a thing, because there are so many things.
Yes, that's my problem too.
But to just choose something simple, I would say Facebook.
That seems like a waste of, you could make anything disappear. And like, what is Facebook? Like, I know you don't like Facebook, but it's not like you have to go on Facebook every day.
But so many of the other things I thought of making disappear, like made stuff complicated in other ways. Yeah. And so I was like, well, what are the consequences of me making this thing disappear? You know?
How is student debt complicated?
I don't have any student debt.
But what about everybody else?
I'm talking, this is my life.
Oh, see, I was thinking about it.
The question was, like, not for the greater good of the world. It was, like, you
heard
it.
I know, yeah. But, like, I guess I just, like, genocide. When I saw it, I was just thinking about, like, what would be good for me and, like, everyone else.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So.
That case, wouldn't do anything for me. It would just be a generous gift to everyone else, and I'm not that generous.
Instead, Facebook.
Yeah.
Facebook might help everybody else.
Yeah.
It probably wouldn't hurt anyone.
If it disappeared.
It would also eliminate a lot of the terrible, like, mass, you know, fake news that gets spread through Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, but we still have Twitter.
Yeah, but Facebook is where all the old people are.
True.
Yeah.
Who read that stuff directly from Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, speaking of Facebook and, like, pissing off old people, I think the thing I would choose is guns.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
that's a good one.
And that is for the greater good, not just for me, because I don't have a gun.
Yeah.
And then, like, nobody would have a gun. There would be no question.
Yeah. I know. And then, like, we could stop having this discussion.
Wow, that's so good, Susan.
Yeah.
I wish I had thought of that one. I thought of a lot of dumb things.
This is Emily. Originally, I was going to go with student debt. And I was thinking about it. It would be a good one. However, you know, I was thinking more about it because, like, then I got on this whole thing of, like, well, you know, like, as I was mentioning earlier, like, well, I want to pick something that would be not only good for me, but just, like, good for, like, the world at large. And I'm like, well, student debt would be good, but I feel like, you know, like, that's not the biggest problem right now. So I think I would make Donald Trump disappear because people disappear.
I knew you were going to say that.
So, I mean, like, because people get disappeared. So that would be good, I think.
Well, I was thinking, like, earlier when I was trying to think of things, I was like, I could say, like, Republicans, but that might just be too many people to be disappeared, you know?
There are Republicans I love in my life.
It wouldn't solve the problems either.
I mean, I don't have any Republicans in my life that I love, but I respect that other people do have Republicans that they love.
My whole family would be gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of us would lose our families.
I also considered men, and then I was like, well, then, you know, people who actually have nice men in their lives would lose them.
Yeah, please don't do that. Thank you.
Wow, I really was thinking in terms of objects and not entire groups of people.
Mine, this is Mary again. Mine was chewing gum.
Whoa.
Girl, I kind of like that. I really hate chewing gum. I do too. I didn't know you also hated it. I really hate it.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I hate it. I don't like to hear people chew it.
Yeah, and like, don't offer it to me. I don't want it.
Yeah, ever. I agree. I don't like chewing gum. It makes you gassy. It's bad for your mouth. It's just bad. Don't do it. Also, no one ever gracefully chews chewing gum.
Ooh, I have a good one.
It's fine. Is this if people like it, it's
across
fine.
The
but
podcast,
like,
we all hate it. Chewing gum, or Kelly, are you the outlier?
I don't chew chewing gum, but I wouldn't say I hate it. Okay. I'm kind of, like, neutral.
I was just going to say, like, that would be that kind of amazing if we all hated chewing gum.
It would be.
If we became an anti-chewing gum
podcast. Then we could just agree on a thing
podcast.
To disappear, and it would be.
That's the only thing we can agree on.
I think we could agree on Donald Trump.
Guns. Well, the only problem with disappearing Donald Trump is, like, then there's still all the other people that will just take his place.
I don't think that like, no, I really did think about this a lot today. I don't think that the people underneath Donald Trump would have as much power as they do right now without Donald Trump. Like, you take away Donald Trump.
Wouldn't those people be the memory police?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Not if they get disappeared.
More likely, we wouldn't get any say in what disappeared.
Yeah.
I mean, this is if
it would
I
be stuff that we wanted to keep.
But if it was chewing gum, we'd all be cool with it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, when the...
All right, so it's settled. Chewing gum.
Yeah. Wait, in the book, when she was like, all the roses disappeared, I was like, okay, I don't really care about that, but...
What about the bachelor cares? How is the bachelor going to live without roses?
They'll just pick a different flower.
I did not even think about that, but
will you accept
so funny.
This tulip?
What a great time to promo our recaps.
Sound the same.
I would love that. Would you accept this tulip?
Will you accept this daisy?
Will you accept this wad of chewing gum?
No.
Instead?
No! Never!
Will you accept this gun?
Honestly, surprised Yikes. That's not what it is.
I mean, a lot of the demographic would be into that, so.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
If you can't tell yet, The Memory Police is a novel about things disappearing. I have a summary from Goodreads.
Oh, boy.
Uh-huh.
It's not bad.
Oh.
On an unnamed island off an unnamed coast, objects are disappearing. First hats, then ribbons, birds, roses, until things become much more serious. Most of the island's inhabitants are oblivious to these changes, while those few imbued with no power to recall the lost objects... No power to recall the lost objects. Does that make sense?
No.
While those few imbued with no power to recall the lost objects...
live in fear of the draconian memory police who are committed to ensuring that what has disappeared remains forgotten. When a young woman who is struggling to maintain her career as a novelist discovers that her editor is in danger from the memory police, she concocts a plan to hide him beneath the floorboards. As fear and loss close in around them, they cling to her writing as the last way of preserving the past.
I have to say that that says wiring, not writing. And I wonder if that was a typo from Oof. Goodreads.
Oof.
Probably.
I'm glad that you read that as writing and not wiring, because writing makes
I
a
know.
Lot more sense.
Too.
But I really had to point it out because it...
That I mean, this description does get at the heart of the novel,
yes.
though. And that is the basic premise. If that premise sounds interesting to you, please go read The Memory Police. And pause this now and come back when you are done.
Because we're going to spoil it.
From here on out... There could be spoilers.
There will be.
Just as a warning. That being said, I don't know how spoilery this book
oh,
is.
Yeah.
Which is something we can talk about. A little context, because this was interesting to me, and we mentioned this at the end of the last episode, but we were kind of confused because, Kelly, you said you had seen the cover of this book and been like, oh, it's beautiful. Yeah. And also old.
Yeah.
And yet, it was, like, not on sale yet.
Yeah.
And it was confusing. The novel was published in 1994 in Japan.
I believe the cover is new.
Yes.
Also.
Yes. But the novel is not new. It's been around since 1994 in Japan, but it's only just been translated into English for a wider audience. And it seems like, from everything I could read, it seems like the person who translates Yoko Ogawa's novels just, like, goes through and is like, I think this one needs to be translated. And picks and chooses. So this was just the next one that they picked. Some context that was interesting to me is Yoko Ogawa has said in an interview with the New York Times, which we can link in the show notes, that she was heavily inspired by the Diary of Anne Frank. And authoritarian government. She talked about how when she was a child, she would read the Diary of Anne Frank and she would like hide in the closet while she was reading it so she could really feel the experience of hiding and feeling in danger. Also, and this is just a fun tidbit that blew my mind, Yoko Ogawa's husband did not know she was an author until she won a major literary prize.
He was just like, I'm going to work. And then she would spend all day writing.
She was writing a novel, got her novel published, received critical acclaim. And then when she won an award, he was like, wait, you wrote a book?
So she was writing under her actual name, right?
I think he just wasn't paying attention to her.
Wow.
He just, like, he went to work every day, and she didn't make a big deal about it.
I wonder if they're still married.
Super divorce.
I hope not, for her sake.
maybe she liked it that way.
I think she made it sound like in the interview she was truly just, like, wanting to write for herself, and it wasn't important to her what others thought about her writing. She just loved writing. But to me, I'm like, if your husband comes home from work and doesn't ask you once what you did all day.
Yeah, that's exactly.
It's weird, too, that she would never mention it, I guess.
Yeah.
I feel like if I write an email, I'm like, Justin, guess what I did today?
I know.
Maybe that's
I will go through my day
problem.
In a list. Like, I wrote some emails. I ate some eggs for breakfast.
Yeah, to give you the play-by-play.
Yes.
Certainly, if I published a novel, that would be on my list of things I did today. Like,
things to talk to my husband about.
Yeah.
So the novel is kind of like, The Memory Police is several things at once. It's a novel about an authoritarian government that's never named and we don't know much about. It's a novel about a woman hiding someone in her house. And it's also a novel with another novel inside it.
Yes.
Yep. It's kind of got a novel within a novel Meta. Thing going on. But the weirdest thing about the entire thing to me, maybe not weirdest, but sort of most noticeable thing about the novel for me, was everything was completely anonymous. They never said where it was. Taking like
an island.
Mm-hmm. Just an island. Somewhere
the island.
That gets cut off from everything else. It never gets named. There are no environmental factors that key us into where it is. None of the characters are named.
I find it interesting that the editor... The dog is named.
The dog gets a name.
And the editor is named R. Instead of...
But that's...
Which isn't a name.
The editor.
But it's interesting that she wouldn't have just referred to him as the editor throughout. Because she refers to the mm-hmm. old man as the old man throughout, you know?
That's true. I guess I'm thinking about, like, how does the setting affect the way we view the novel?
I think that the fact that it doesn't, you know, it doesn't have a specific distinctive setting gives it that quality of a fable or a fairy tale almost.
For sure.
And the same thing goes for the characters who don't necessarily have, like, distinctive personality traits or, like, you know, we don't get, like, a real good sense of what they look like. It's just kind of, like, everything is, like, a stand-in for an idea, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Thanks!
Yes. Cool.
Cool. Next point.
Yeah. I thought you were talking about, like, I mean, it's... Somewhere in Japan, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, I'm assuming it's somewhere in Japan or near Japan.
I mean, they use Japanese words for things.
Right.
Yeah, I was going to say, the only thing that even, like, clues you in that it could be a part of Japan is, like, the discussion of the music box and, like, pronouncing a Japanese word.
Right. But, which, you know, I don't know if the author wrote that intending it to be, like, this takes place in Japan, or if she just wrote it, like, I live in Japan. I'm Japanese. Like,
I'm writing this in Japanese.
Right. This is what I know.
Or,
you know.
The translator, though, must have meant it that way, because there are other objects that she learns the name of that are only given English names.
Right.
Like, perfume.
I mean, that could be a choice on the translator's part.
Yeah.
To some extent. Or I guess there's some things that you would just... like, that maybe Yoko Ogawa took for granted. Like, there's a candy that has disappeared.
Yeah.
And they're sharing it. And the word for the candy is Japanese.
Right.
But, like, in Japan, if it's a common candy...
Yeah, like, everyone would know
it. You know, it would be like I said, Snickers disappeared.
She might not have been thinking while she was writing it, like, what if someone in another country is reading this? You know?
Right.
But also...
Because, again, she writes for herself.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, you know, so, like, I was, although, like, it was hard not to think of it as being Japanese, because there also is something very Japanese about, like, the the way that, and again, this comes down to translation too, but like the items that are described, and like when you're imagine, when she's talking about even the food that is being placed out, and it'll be, you know, like a small white plate with a small slice of right. cake with buttery icing, just like these really sort of simple like dishes and things that are described in a way that you can just imagine that like pure, like clean looking Japanese aesthetic. Yeah. In the way that the things are described.
Mm-hmm. I also, in speaking about the writing, like, it does seem like a very Japanese novel to me, too. Not that I'm an expert on Japanese writing, but just, like, sort of, like, a reflection on nature and setting in a way that's, like, simultaneously kind of sparse mm-hmm. and really descriptive at the same time.
Yeah.
To me, like, any time a setting was described, I knew exactly what was meant, but it didn't go on for pages and pages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense at all. I have to draw the comparison to another novel that I love, Annihilation. Okay. This made me think
have
of
Have you read other novels?
I have. I was what I all right, I'm going to go with you on this journey, but I'm not seeing the connection.
I just
naturally.
So like, I think not naming any of your characters and being non-specific about setting can go one of two ways. So like, Annihilation is the same thing in terms of not naming characters. And I felt like sort of a kinship with these characters, right? We're all just going out to maybe die.
Maybe.
No need to name us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But in The Memory Police, I felt like not naming the characters, not sort of getting more details about them, put up a barrier between me and the novel. Like, I was reading it, and I was enjoying seeing what was happening, but I never felt connected in any way to what was going on.
Huh.
Or sort of, like, close to the
action. That's interesting because you mentioned, I mean, like, it seems like a big deal for you that nobody was named. That didn't really ever stand out to me. Like, I didn't even think about it as I was reading it. I don't know if it's, again, like, I know we talk a lot about the experience of audio versus reading it and how that changes. And I don't know, I know Susan and I listened to the audiobook, so I don't know if that affects, I mean, because I guess with an audiobook, you are hearing somebody say the words, and that connects you to that person in some way, if they're doing a good job.
Especially if it's first person, which this is.
Right. But that didn't, it never struck me that nobody was being named. Like,
that makes sense.
It didn't have any effect on me, I guess, is all I was saying.
Yeah. I would agree that I did feel a distance while reading this. So I'm not sure if it was, like, specifically because of the characters not having names or if it was just because I felt like the narrator herself was sort of distant from things because she is a person who is forgetting all of this stuff and she keeps describing, you know, her heart as having holes in it, or, you know, she is slowly, you know, becoming emptier and emptier. And I think that because of that, and because of, like, her describing a thing that she can't remember anymore, and I know what it is, and I obviously can remember it, because I don't live in this universe that she lives in, that does right. put distance between me and her.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, if anything, you know, I related the most to R because he was the one who still knew what everything was and was sort of, like, you know, a surrogate for the reader being able to say, like, this is what this is. This is what it does. Let me try to help you remember. Where she's describing, you know, at, like, later on in the novel, she loses, you know, the ability to use certain limbs because she can't remember that it's there, but it is there. And it's, like, so hard to imagine the sensation of not be of like knowing that your limb is there and, like, but, like, not knowing what it is.
That's interesting. Why do you think they chose to tell it from the perspective of someone who is forgetting versus the character who, like, I feel like if this were an American novel, It would definitely be from the perspective
of somebody who is, like, one of the special ones who remembers.
Totally.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, and I think, and it says something similar in that, the NPR review of the book, where
which we will link to.
Yeah, which we will link to, and we'll talk about it more later, too, but, at the beginning, she says, let me just, because I thought this was really interesting, if the memory police were an American novel, it might yield a contrarian hero determined to fight off the tyranny of the police. It would be something akin to The Handmaid's Tale or the movie version of Minority Report. One can even envision a high-paid Hollywood actor starring in the Netflix adaptation. They're coming for your memories, but she's got a plan to stop them. but this is a Japanese novel, so for anyone looking for thrills, I'd like to warn you that despite the tagline Orwellian on the back cover of the book, this reads much more like a surrealist drama than a science fiction thriller. Which, yeah, like, I think it is distinctly un-American to not have a quote-unquote hero at the center of the story.
And, like, in a lot of ways, the emphasis, the protagonist emphasizes how much people in general on this island just want to get on with their lives.
Yeah.
Like, they're not interested in being big heroes, necessarily, and fighting back. And on the whole, people are just trying to, like, get some food at the market and cook and just, like, be normal. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's such a big deal that the narrator decides to hide her editor, because that is sort of, like, stepping out.
Yeah.
And doing something really big and really active. Very main character-y.
Yes. Yes. And I do wonder if it says something, you know, about the kind of person that she is, or if it's the fact that she lost her mother to the memory police when she was very small, and so her right. taking an R is her way of, you know, making it up to her mom somehow, or you know. Like, if that hadn't happened with her mom, would she have still been the type of person to to hide him?
Probably not.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah.
She's just, and I think, like, a lot of the reviews I read of this said that this book is, like, described it as passive.
Right.
And I guess, like, I kind of want to push against that a little bit, because I think that's a simplified way of looking at what's happening in this book. But also, like, I would agree that it seems to me that this book is more just, like, presenting a situation rather than, I don't know, like, an arc about, like, here's a bad situation and here's how they, like, I don't know, like, okay. So I've taught dystopian novels a lot. I've taught, like, a dystopian themed class and all that stuff. And, like, in the traditional dystopian story arc, there is some sort of, like, hero or outsider who fights against the system that's oppressing him or her, and either they succeed or they don't, but they try to fight it in some way. There's not really, like, a we succeeded or we failed moment. It's just sort of, like, it's happening and it's continuing to happen.
Yeah. It's not about overcoming the situation. It's just about,
but, like, does that mean that it's passive?
So, the NPR review that calls it a quiet, surreal drama that Kelly mentioned also says, like you mentioned, Emily, that the narrator watches on as things happen because of a deep-rooted passivity. And they keep saying that the narrator is passive. And I think you're right. I mean, I would agree that, like, it's not as simple as that. And it is kind of, like, following in the dystopian tradition of, like, here's a situation, and maybe there's not a good solution.
Well, and the very nature of what is happening to these people makes it harder for them to be active, because it's almost like a hypnosis of some kind. And it's interesting that, you know, we don't get any kind of explanation for, like, how it is that these memories are being taken away from people. But, like, they wake up and this memory is going and gone. And it's hard to fight for something that you can't remember.
It's that was the weirdest part to me of the whole novel is the premise that memories are disappearing. People are just forgetting objects and things out of their life. And there's no explanation for how this is happening or why it's happening. I mean, I guess I assumed that the memory police and whoever is instructing them is doing this to maintain power over people. But, like, how?
Yeah, and what kind of power? Because we were talking, I was also talking with Emily about this earlier, and that it's so different from something like 1984, which is about, you know, controlling people's, like, independence or, like, ability to think freely. Like, and here it's like we have things disappearing, like flowers or birds or...
Yeah. Meanwhile, a novelist is still able to write novels.
Right.
When you think of, like, a totalitarian government... It seems like that would be, like, one of the first things to go.
It was weirdest to me. Not weird. I keep saying weird because I don't know how to describe this novel.
It is weird. It is very weird.
The most...
Not in a bad way.
No, not in a bad way. It's just hard to, like, articulate what I was thinking and feeling while I was reading it. The strangest, most difficult to wrap my head around disappearance... was probably when people's limbs started disappearing. Mm-hmm. But.
What about seasons?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's just no way to possibly understand, like, how these things.
I think, though, birds was sort of the most telling in how it works.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Because everyone woke up one day and they thought, something's disappeared. What is it? And everybody went outside and saw all the birds flying away. And all the people who had birds as pets were like, I don't know what this thing in my house is anymore.
Yeah.
Guess I gotta let it go. And they were sad.
Yeah.
And sort of remembered this was their pet, but they just had to let it go because they knew it had disappeared. And I mean, I think that was the strangest and maybe most telling of how it happens thing to me. Is everyone just stopped. It's not like the objects themselves disappeared. It's just that everyone collectively unlearned what this thing is and then had to get rid of it because it was so disturbing.
Yeah.
She describes like having, feeling like driven to burn something immediately.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And not just even
get
like.
Get rid of it.
Oh, I know I have to do this, but almost like I don't know why I'm doing it, but I have to burn it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like hats.
Yeah. Hats. What I don't really, as far as like the rules of how that works, though, I don't totally understand how like the people who do remember it, like with the leg, for example, like once the left legs of everyone disappeared, like R's leg is fine.
Yes.
And she talks about being able to spot people who were hidden because they don't walk around the same way as everyone else because they still can feel their leg.
Right.
They're pretending.
They're not shifting their weight in the same way.
And that baffles me. Like, yeah. I get that they're not affected by the forgetting part, but it's weird that, like, a physical feeling doesn't affect them.
Yeah, I guess it's like... I mean, it's, like, it's different from just, like, experiencing a paralysis because it's, like, they can look down at their leg and be, like, I don't know what this thing – she wakes up and she's, like, there's something attached to my hip. What is this?
It's, and, like, I thought we stares were about at to her pants some. To realize, like, this thing will fit into that hole.
Yeah.
But I don't know
But there's another leg like, that she can acknowledge as her leg. So that's, like, crazy that...
She's like, yes, my right leg and this thing.
But it is also kind of a paralysis because she can't feel it.
Right.
Like, when R is touching it, she can't feel her leg.
Right. She describes it as, like... you know, some, like, skin rubbing against skin or something, which is, like, you know, if, I'm sure, like, if I had ever been paralyzed, I would know how that felt. But just, like, when, it says enough to have been shot with Novocaine and know the feeling of like rubbing your finger on your lip and like,
yeah,
it feels like leather or something. I feel something
with my finger, but not with my lip.
Yeah, exactly. But
lips disappearing would be
this is me wanting to like die on the hill of genre again, and it doesn't matter, but I wouldn't call this like a science fiction novel. I'd call it magical realism with like some dystopian elements.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think sci-fi usually makes more of an attempt to, like...
be scientific.
Yeah, or kind of, like explain some of the how behind, like, why the world is the way it is, or why the rules are the way they are.
Yeah. Well, I think dystopian often just gets lumped into sci-fi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, like, I think speculative fiction often gets lumped into sci-fi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this isn't purely dystopian because it does have that element of something happening that is not explained.
But, yeah, this is more proof that
genre's dumb.
Wow. Exact same moment. I don't know if it sounded like that to you guys, but on my
end. It sounded like it to me.
You said it exact same
time. It sounded like she said it after me to me. Oh, so okay. To me, I came up with it and she copied me.
Well, when you edit this, make
but
sure.
But I'll edit it so that it's together. Yeah.
She copied me.
Make sure to line it up. She'll put it so that hers is first and then Mary just agrees.
That's fine.
Yeah. No, I'll put it together. It's fine.
I also want to talk about, Emily, you mentioned that it's...
What do I do?
It's strange that part of the novel is that the protagonist is writing a novel. That novels are not one of the first things to disappear.
Yeah. Okay, so just like from a practical standpoint, it seems weird that novels would still exist because like by the time that novel's published, like half the stuff in it's going to be gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you got to get rid of those books.
Right.
That seems rough. Like, how are you gonna be sure that everything you wrote isn't gonna be forgotten before? Like,
I didn't even think about that, and now I'm like kind of mad.
Well, you fix the manuscript during the reprint. That's what happens.
Also, though, it's like typos. It seemed like no one was reading books.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who is she selling these books to?
Like, how is she making money? That's my question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, especially so. Can we talk about the story she's writing?
I want to say, generally, in the novel, the protagonist is an author, and she is writing a novel throughout the memory police. And so, like, each chapter or every other chapter will get, like, the beginning is this long passage of her novel, and it's in a different font if you're reading.
It's not in a different font if you're listening, because sometimes I got very confused.
It threw me for a loop. Because I was like, whoa,
it's
hold on. I was like,
different
I'm so glad I'm not the only one, because there were some times where I was like, wait, who is this talking?
Yeah, because there's no indication that something's different. It's just same voice. Yes.
Okay.
Rolling on through.
Again, no
they
one's named.
Got a different narrator, I think. That would have been good.
Yeah, I feel like it was very distinctly... In the book, like, reading it, you could very obviously tell.
Yeah.
Because there'd also be, like, a little, like, you know, tick mark between sections or whatever.
Okay, well, we didn't get that either.
Yeah, they should. That's Audible's fault. So.
There's, like, all these different levels. I read it on Kindle. So, like, in the print version, you get a tick mark and you get a different font.
Yeah.
In the Kindle version, you get a different font. In the audiobook, all bits
Just, like, enough that you were paying.
Better listen
like
carefully.
A long run-on sentence. You don't know where you
are. It took me, like, the second time that came up to realize, like, oh, this is a separate...
Yes.
thing, because it almost sounded like it was just something
furious.
Happening to her.
Yeah, the first section I was like, oh, okay, yeah, she went to typing school, totally buying that, like, she's a writer, maybe she wanted to type faster.
Yeah exactly.
So
it kind of makes sense
when we cut away from typing school and she's like doing something else. I'm like, wait, we didn't resolve the typing school thing, like, what happened, you know?
Yeah. And I thought maybe it was just at first I thought once I realized it wasn't just, like, the same thing happening to her at the same time, I thought it was, like, that was something in the future or something, and now we were back, like, before she was captured. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, once she started talking more like, oh, I was writing about a typist, but I don't know why. I was like, Susan, you dumb.
That no, I had the same experience.
This is what's happening.
I'm glad I'm not the only one because, like, that was very confusing. It took me a while to orient myself.
I really blame the audiobook for this, though, now that I know that, no one else had any trouble.
No.
Emily and I were just like, what?
A font change would have been made all the difference.
Nice. You know? A voice font change.
Yeah. Read it in italics.
Yeah.
What the creative writing corner has to say about these novel excerpts, because to me, the untrained creative writer, they were not good.
Oh, really? I was more interested in that story than the other story.
Maybe it's just like a preference thing. I was just like, I don't care.
Oh, no, I was interested.
Like, please get me back to this man. I was like, oh,
you can't speak and you got kidnapped and he's taking your voice through the typing. Like, that was interesting.
I mean, it was an interesting story, but I was less interested in it because I was, like, more invested in the action of the other story. And I was like, this is just a fake thing within this story, so it has no bearing on this story.
See, maybe I hadn't realized it was a fake thing. If I thought it was real at first.
Yeah, if I thought it was real, then I would have been
it's
into it,
It's more shocking
probably,
when you find out it's not real.
I have a confession, or I have something that I need to tell you, Kelly. Like, none of this story is real.
Well, I have like, a confession.
None of it happened.
Did you know with novels, though, you can just make it up from nowhere?
Yeah.
No, I know, but, like,
that's
it's
what
like when you're reading something and I'm thinking, like, in this book, this part of this book is, like, not even real in the book, you know? It's, like...
That never bothers me. It doesn't make me care less because I realize none of it is real.
I have a question about the timing of it. So, like, she's writing that, and she, before novels disappear, but things are disappearing, she's still writing that. Then she's supposed to keep writing in secret, but it seems like the only thing she's really able to write after novels disappear is, like, nonsense. Was this novel, like, was all of that story written already? Or is she still writing it, but not knowing what she's writing?
Okay, well, what I was confused about, because, like, for the whole time, I was assuming that as she was telling the story, the little excerpts that we were getting were, like, what she had written so far, you know? And then the story would continue, then she'd write more of the novel. Yeah. And then we get to the part where she can't write anything. But then, almost like, towards the very end, we get, like, a good chunk of her finishing the novel. And I don't know how she did that. Because she's like, it was so hard for me to finish this. Like, I only had the use of one hand and I didn't know what words were and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, how did you do this? Like, that didn't make any sense to me.
I mean, but by the end, what was happening in the novel was what was happening to her in terms of, like, the voice. It was just happening differently, I guess. But, I mean, she was losing things and, like, facing this, like, final moment of...
Her character, like, lost, like, everything... Like, but lost her voice first, and then she, like, only had her voice at the end.
Yeah. So when I say the same, I mean different, but similar.
Can we talk about the end for a second?
Yeah. This is really depressing.
So, like, at the end of the novel, the protagonist has lost everything except her voice, and so she's a disembodied voice in the hidden room with R.
Or that's how she sees herself anyway.
Right. she's from the first person, a disembodied voice in the room. And then she says, she looks down at everything. She says, you know, I've got to go now. The voice is the last thing. And then she looks down and she sees all of the objects that have been forgotten that R has saved, because he has, like, a little collection going. Like, all the books that he had saved away, like, some of the little treasures that they had discovered throughout the novel, and then also her body's on the floor. And she thinks, is he going to keep my body with the other treasures?
Gross.
The end.
Well, he leaves. Like, she hears him leave.
Well, everybody else is just...
Yeah, and she says she continues to disappear. But
Yeah, so she just, he leaves her down there with all the other forgotten stuff, because there's nothing he can do.
Yeah.
Like.
Does she keep existing for him, though? Or does she die?
I think she, well, I don't know if she dies or if she just,
becomes
like.
Becomes a shell?
Well, she'll die eventually because she can't, like, feed herself and stuff, yeah. I guess. Right. But she's, her body is, like, technically alive, but I think her consciousness is gone. Because she can't, because nothing exists to her, right? Not even herself.
You should really take her somewhere.
My sort of logical question is, if everybody who is able to forget things that disappear has sort of forgotten that they are a body, mm-hmm. and are presumably going to die, and so if people are hiding like are, you know, it's safe to come out because everybody's unable to do anything. Do the memory police forget things?
They can't, because otherwise how would they be able to get rid of stuff?
How would they be able to identify? Would they just, I mean, I guess they could say, like, that's a thing, I don't know what it is.
No, I don't think the memory police forget things, and I think that her point was that R could leave because the memory police had already, like, everyone had already forgotten everything, and the memory police had nothing left to collect.
Mm-hmm.
So they could leave.
What is their end goal?
That's my question.
What happens once?
Like, why not just kill everybody?
Yeah, faster and less painfully and miserably.
It's you know, it's surreal. It's a parable. It's not supposed to.
But I still want to know what the goal is.
Yeah.
Like, half of my mind says, this is a really good novel that makes you reflect on a situation or, like, possibilities and sort of, like, the terrifying nature of oppressive governments and how important memory is. It's, like, a nice reflection on memory and loss. And it made me feel things. And when I ended the novel, part of me thought, that was, like, a really good way to end, and there's something really beautiful about R leaving this confinement and the narrator just kind of, like, disappearing as a voice and feeling free from all of this loss. But then the other part of me is, like, but I also want to know logically what happened, which we can't do, right? Like, we can't read beyond the novel or, like,
real.
Always get a conclusion like that.
Nothing happens. But it's not real. It ends.
I love how Emily is constantly reminding us, like, guys, fiction is fake.
These are things I wonder about.
Just so you know.
I guess, like, but, I mean, like, it's worth talking about here because, like, I think, and this happens a lot with books that are using, I don't want to say science fiction, but, like, fantasy elements, fantastical elements to make a point. Mm-hmm. That's not related to mm-hmm. the fantastical elements. It's like, it doesn't have to, like, make logical sense because that's not the point. It is, I mean, I took it to be, like, what you're saying, Mary. It's a reflection on memory and loss mm-hmm. and sort of, like, what sort of value those things have in our lives and effect they have on our lives. So it doesn't really matter that it doesn't, like, logically makes sense or that, like, the memory police, like, I don't understand what the memory police want because that's not the point.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel the same way with, like, mm-hmm. Never Let Me Go. A lot of people, Never Let Me Go is one of my favorite books. And a lot of people criticize that book because they're like, well, the clone stuff doesn't make sense. Like, why are they doing this? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, that's not the fucking point of the book. Yeah. The point of the book is to, like, explore what it means to be human and... So, like, mm-hmm. I'm not cursing at y'all for asking that question. I'm cursing at people who said about Never Let Me Go because I'm very sensitive about that book. But, like, in general, like, that's just sort of, like, my stance on stuff like that is, like, it doesn't matter because it's a book. And, like, that's not what the author's trying to – that's not what the author is exploring here. It's not a science fiction book because that's not the purpose of this. If this were a science fiction book in the realist sense – then the why and the how would matter.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not concerned about the how, really. I'm a lot more concerned about the why. And that's, like, the thing that that gets me, like, that makes it hard for me to, like, fully, because, like, when I start to think about the story, it's, like, if you think about it too hard, it falls apart, you know? And, like, it's hard to, when you're trying to think of it on, like, a critical level, to not, you know, ask those questions.
So,
which doesn't mean that I didn't enjoy the book, because I did. But yeah. It is something that frustrates me.
I'm not criticizing it because I don't know the answer to that question. But when I think about both what the author is exploring and just what it makes me think about, those are the questions that I still, that still come to mind mm-hmm. first. And
yeah.
I don't need to know the answer necessarily, but, like, when I think about it, I do kind of think, like, okay, like, if we took this further, then, like, what would happen?
Right. Something you think about.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying, like, oh, I'm knocking a star off because I don't find out the answer or anything. Yeah. I kind of want to know.
Yeah.
I want that book.
I also think that because the book is called The Memory Police, and, like, there is so much emphasis on the memory police themselves and, like, the scary building that they're in and the things that they wear and, like, you know, seeing them around, it's, like, you know, I do, like, question what the whole point of it is.
Well, and part of the reason that I think this gets the tag Orwellian is not just because, like, it's an authoritarian government, but because, like, the thought police and the memory police are two mm-hmm. really similar sounding organizations. And, like,
right,
while
right.
they do different things, there is an element in 1984 where, like, their history gets True. Erased and rewritten based mm-hmm. on whoever's in power at the time, which that is kind of similar to what's happening here, although we don't know, like, who's in power or why. But, like, yeah. that's, I think, why I want to ask those questions, because, A, 1984 is my favorite novel of all time. And, B, I think, like, the idea of controlling people's thoughts, mm-hmm. which includes memory, I guess, like, that mm-hmm. makes me ask so many more questions. And I like to think about that stuff, as scary as it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Orwell did it better, though, I guess, if we're comparing. I don't think you can really call it Orwellian. It's not really the same type of book. So.
Yeah, I think they're doing different things. And also, like, Orwell, you know, did this that particular story first.
Also, you can't just, too, like, slap Orwellian on anything dystopian, because it's not. That's not what that means.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And, like,
it's, I think I'm having a marketing issue. With the book. It's not an issue with the book, it's an issue with the marketing.
That's what like, publishers do, is they take a book, they find a list of books, literally, like, when we get, here's a little publishing info for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, tell us.
When I,
behind the scenes.
When I get, like, the information for a book that I'm going to do a cover for, there's a sheet that has, like, the plot description, you know, the price, the author, and then at the bottom of the sheet it has, like comparable titles, and then it gives you, like, four or five books that are, you know, similar, or, like, that you should use to describe what this book is like. And so it's like this issue that we've talked about with Gone Girl, where it's, like, every single thriller on the back of it says, like, the yeah. next Gone Girl,
yeah.
when literally the only thing it has in common with Gone Girl is that there is a woman in it and it's a thriller.
Yeah, Sherry, like, LaPena. Yeah.
Yeah, seriously. But yeah, I mean,
yeah, I'm just saying his name gets slapped on a lot of things that are yeah. dystopian in
yes
a lot of different ways.
You're right.
That have nothing to do with yeah. that.
Yeah,
that's true.
Mm-hmm. And I find that a similar thing is happening now with, like, The Handmaid's Tale. Now that it's, like, a show,
yep.
people yeah. are constantly yeah. saying that, oh, this is like The Handmaid's Tale.
And then Margaret Atwood said, "Hold my beer."
Yeah. Yeah, you know what's like The Handmaid's Tale? The sequel to The Handmaid's Tale.
The Handmaid's Tale 2.
Back in the Habit.
I hope that's what it's called.
Back in
the Habit?
Back in the Habit!
Oh, no.
If we, like, had multiple t-shirts with, like, things on them.
Back in the Habit would be
that would be one of them.
The Handmaid's Tale 2, yeah. Back in the Habit.
Back in the Habit.
It would need to be that whole name.
Yes. Yeah.
The last thing I'm sort of thinking about, as we're thinking about, like, what is this novel about, or what does it reflect upon? A lot of critics, including the New York Times article that I mentioned when we first started talking about this book, which we will link, a lot of critics have said that even though this book came out in 1994, it is eerily similar to current events. And I agree. Not in a literal sense. It's not like the memory police are coming to our houses or anything, but sort of the general feel of it, of, you know, like regulations being put on people to drive them apart in some sense.
Well, oppression is timeless.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I wondered what you guys thought about it, thinking, like, reading this book in 2019, knowing it was written in 1994. Do you think it was, like, looking ahead a little bit, or is this just something that history falls into repeatedly?
History does fall into it repeatedly, I think. But also, in terms of, like, America today, I couldn't help but think about, like, the way information is disseminated and presented to different groups of people by different groups of people, and like that will almost give you sort of like a different memory of a way something happened, because here's how the story was told to you, and so now you remember that event this way. And I know, obviously, since this was written in 1994, that's not like what the intention probably was, but that is, like, a way that I think this is still applicable right now, here, on this island.
On this island, America.
Not an island. I know America's not an island. Don't email me.
Yeah, and I mean, I think...
this metaphorical island.
I think... Can you imagine if someone actually emailed us?
Actually.
Like, really, this is what you actually, give us with listener feedback about? When we ask so nicely for you to give it to us about books.
Really?
Isn't everything an island if you zoom out enough?
Hey, write that book, Mary.
Earth is an island.
Earth is an island, man.
Whoa. Earth is an island, dude.
I was going to say that I also see similarities or... like an echo thinking about, you know, the NSA and, you know, feeling unsafe in even just the things that you know or the things that you talk about, and not even like your actions or whatever, but just like, you know, we're outside talking about this thing and we shouldn't, like, be careful and stuff like that. And also obviously with people, you know, breaking in the middle of the night and taking people away. It's, you know, we have the constant, like, immigration crisis going on and ICE, like, being shitheads and ruining people's lives. But yeah, I mean, I think, like, reading it, the most that I, like, the most obvious parallel is to the Holocaust, especially with hiding families and things like that. But I don't think it's necessarily that, It was just happenstance that she wrote this, and it turned out that these things would... Because I think, like, literally at any time, I think you're right that history kind of repeats these same awful patterns over and over again, and we're fucked, so...
This feels eerily similar to... I taught a specific Japanese poet in class this week. Her name's Sagawa Chika, and... It's, you know, Friday before Labor Day holiday. All the kids are pumped. And I was just like, here's this poem. What do we think? Like, what do we get out of this poem? And they're like, it's depressing. The message of the poem is the world sucks and we can't die. So we just have to live in it. And I was like, great. Okay. And then, like, it just got more and more depressing. And by the end, I was just like, have a great day. And so now this feels like.
Well, you chose the poem.
I did. You chose the poem. I think it's beautiful. So now I feel like I've been like, here's this depressing novel that is a meditation on grief and loss and how history is doomed to repeat itself. What did you rate it?
That was perhaps the greatest way to transition into
it. I mean, also, if we have anything else we want to talk about, we can talk about it.
Well, I'll go first. If we're going to go into ratings, should I? Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm just going to go with my gut because... Yeah, sure. As I told everyone before we started recording, I finished this a solid 2 minutes before. So this fresh. Is friggity fresh on my mind. And I'm going to give it a 3. I don't know if that'll change after I sit with it longer. But this is like, I normally don't really like speculative type stuff as much. But like, I really liked the concept of this and sort of how timeless it is. And mm-hmm. Yeah, I also kind of like that it was a meditation like on writing and the creative process as well, and in addition to memory and loss and all of that jazz. So yeah, even though I wasn't sure at first what was happening novel in a novel wise.
It's okay, again, I did not know either. We're in this boat together. I would not have known. An audiobook
but
problem.
Hey, some of my favorite Shakespeare has got the play within a play thing going write to on. Audible. So, I mean,
us that that's happening.
I don't hate it. I do think though that like it's not the type of book I usually gravitate toward. But so I liked it actually more than I thought I was going to when I first started it, which is good. So 3.
It's good.
Yeah.
Nice.
I'll go.
Go.
This is Kelly.
Hey.
And I am also going to give it a 3, I think. If I could, I would give it a 3.5. But yeah, I think I liked it a lot and I loved the idea and I like found it pleasurable to read, just like the way that it read was like, I don't know how to describe it, but it was nice. I liked it. I think I just didn't ever quite, fully connect to it. And I think that that is what is stopping me from giving it a higher score rating.
That's all. I feel like 3 is a pretty good rating, honestly. 3
is good.
Yeah. I also gave it a 3. This is Emily.
Yay.
Do not ever mind when things are depressing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Me neither.
I mean, let's just go on the record to say undergrad students will always complain if shit is depressing.
That's true.
But they're
welcome
wrong.
Welcome to being alive, bitches.
I think they
complain because, like, yeah, they just haven't realized how terrible life is. And when you realize that life is terrible, you don't really want to read about happy things because that seems false and you can't really identify with that.
Most books are not
and
happy.
Also when you've been through shit, you don't want to read about people being happy. Yeah. You just don't.
Yeah.
Most things are not happy, guys. Okay.
Also that happiness for the undergrads is not listening. Interesting.
Yeah. Happiness isn't interesting. Exactly. We want to read about, I mean, it's like Bachelor in Paradise. Would we watch Bachelor in Paradise if everyone just coupled up and was happy? No. As soon as they do that, we stop paying attention to them.
Well, and the show stops paying attention to them. Yeah. They don't even, like, show those people anymore. They're just like...
Right.
And are you the one? You go straight to the honeymoon house.
Which is the best solution. Anyway,
get the fuck out.
All that saying, I agree with everything everyone said already about it. I really enjoyed the premise. This is the type of thing that I would like reading usually. But I don't know, like, I guess like I'm giving it a 3 because it didn't get expanded on like in a way that I thought was like the most interesting.
Yeah.
Like sometimes it felt like a little too, like, meditative. Mm-hmm. Like, I wanted a little bit more to happen, I guess.
Yeah. It lacked momentum.
Yes. And I guess maybe that's just me, the American reader,
right,
wanting somebody to do something. I don't know. That's blame America. Blame Donald Trump. I don't know.
I don't know if this is the first time this has ever happened, but I also gave it a 3.
Oh, my God.
What? what?
Threes all around.
We hate gum, and we gave this book a 3. Let's go.
If I could give half stars, I might give it a 3.5. I really enjoyed it, and I too found it pleasurable to read. But
yeah, I mean, I found it pleasurable to read.
Yeah, I thought the writing was really pretty in places, like, but not too pretty, you know, not too much for me.
It wasn't like flowery. Yeah.
And this is totally the type of book I would like to read. And it made me think, like, when I was in high school, I used to read, like, I was, like, kind of into some Japanese novels and thought I was super hip and cool because of that, because I was a dumb teenager. But this made me think, like, there are so many great novels out there that are in translation and just, like, made me remember that, like, it's cool that everybody all around the world is writing. And
yeah.
Even though we don't always get to see it.
I know.
Even though their husbands don't know about it.
Translated books to read on here.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed reading it, but I did, like, I felt like there was something that I could have connected with more, and I just don't know what it was. But yeah. I did enjoy it, and I would recommend other people to read it, too.
Yeah.
Especially if you want, like, a more leisurely, reflective experience.
Like, you can take your, this can be, like, a slow read. Like, you can read it before bed for 15 minutes here and there.
But maybe read
not
it.
Like, you
so
have to, like, zip right through.
You can see the font change, because that would be so confusing.
Yeah, now that I know that, I'm going to go ahead and recommend you read it with your eyeballs.
Truly, I love that you guys listen to audiobooks so much, because it lets me think about audiobooks, because I'm always wanting to know how audiobooks are, because I am so picky about them.
Yeah, my reading is always about half and half. I usually have an actual book going on while I'm listening to an audiobook. So sometimes I listen to audiobooks, sometimes I don't for the podcast. It just kind of depends on, like, where I am in my reading cycle.
Yeah.
I almost always do, but it's because I usually read my, like, other fun books, like, read. And when I have two at a time, I have to have, like, one of each.
Separate them somehow.
Exactly. Not that these aren't fun books, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
The God ones season. That I, like, pick up in the store, where I'm like, ooh.
You're not having fun here?
I've been meaning to talk to you.
You can get out. You know how many people would love to have your job?
This is a job?
My job? Hey, everyone who just heard that, in case that made you get the impression that I'm getting paid and you could take my job and get paid for this, you can't.
Or that any of us are getting paid.
Please don't get excited.
Wait, y'all aren't getting paid?
If I wasn't having fun, I wouldn't do it because I'm not getting paid.
I'm getting paid.
If you would like to pay us.
Any revenue we have ever made from donations and or t-shirt sales have gone directly back into the podcast.
Yeah.
So, this is a nonprofit.
Yeah. So, that being said, of course I'm having fun, because I wouldn't do it if I wasn't having fun and not getting paid. And two, if you want to pay us, we are open to that. So,
Blue Apron, open. If you're out there.
We'll advertise some bullshit we don't care about at all. Or you.
No, we don't. We care about all of you guys. I have a Casper mattress. I will tell you about it if I get paid to do it. Otherwise, nope.
Casper is like the dream sponsor at this point.
The dream.
Or Squarespace, which we also use.
We
could come up.
I also subscribe to Purple Carrot. Purple Carrot, I don't know if you do this type of thing, but, like, I will hook you up with some. I'll tell you guys all about the meals I'm making. Mm-hmm. Not until I get paid, though.
Our reviews are on lockdown.
You have to pay to get access.
Yeah. So if you want to ask us anything about the book, tell us anything about the book, or offer us money, you can email us at thesquad@booksquadgoals.com.
Don't ask me about my Casper mattress, though, unless you're going to pay me.
Don't you dare.
A piece of feedback.
A piece.
A piece of feedback.
Slice. Like a little slice of cake.
from Taylor, who responded to us on Facebook about Cersei.
And Taylor, we don't know where you're from, so, you know, feel free to let us know and we'll give you a shout
Taylor
out.
Taylor from Facebook.
Yeah, somewhere in Facebook land.
Which I disappeared earlier, so.
Yeah. So we don't even have this feedback. Thanks, Kelly.
Skip. No. I'm just kidding.
I will go ahead and read it. Okay, Taylor said that she read Cersei. I asked who read Cersei, what did you think about it? And Taylor said, I did. Once she got shut out on the island, I adored the book. She was real whiny at first, and I got pretty grouchy because I was promised a badass bitch.
Well, look, she was pretty grouchy, too. So
she got there, though, even if the ending weirded me out a little. I read Song of Achilles hoping that it would be wonderful in all sorts of ways, that, like Cersei was. While it was enjoyable, I didn't have as many feelings about it. It was a gay romance, which is needed and good in and of itself. However, it kind of fell flat in comparison. I loved watching Cersei become a character, whereas I felt like all I got out of Patroclus was a dude in love with Achilles who just grew into a jerk.
Spoiler. I'm reading that right now, and I disagree. I disagree.
Well, we'll see how you feel about it.
Yeah, I'll get back to you, Taylor. I'm like, follow up. I'm probably 75% of the way through, and I'm loving it. So,
okay, cool.
I want to read
because I want to read that too. Yeah.
I'm curious about it.
And I have a plane ride tomorrow, so I'm probably going to finish it on the plane. I'm really excited. I get a lot of reading accomplished on planes.
And Susan's always on planes because she's our jet setter.
It's true.
No, just recently I've been forced to be on planes a lot. I don't like planes.
You like traveling, though.
Mm.
Yeah, but, like, I'm going to Cleveland tomorrow, so, like...
Cleveland's cool.
No, I am excited about this conference. I'm just saying, like, I'm going to Ohio, so don't get excited. I'm not, like...
Yeah, fuck you, Ohio.
Okay, I can say that I'm from the Midwest, so it's, like, I can hate on the whole Midwest. They're all the same. Yeah.
What's on the blog?
Rehabs. We got Are You the One, Bachelor in Paradise, Never Again. So get your Bachelor in Paradise now, yeah. Because we're throwing in the towel after this. We're never again doing Bachelor in Paradise. It's just too much content.
Yeah,
that's like
it's meant to be just looked at.
Just let it wash over you. Don't try to think about it too much. Like, if you try to make sense of it, you will go insane, which is what's happening to us right now. Like,
yeah, Emily and I have lost it.
Absolutely gone batshit at this point, so.
And Ben is going to lose it this week.
Yeah, so. Ben is guesting on this recap.
Oh, yeah, oh my God.
We're excited to have him. He does not know how awful it truly is, so this will be good.
I want it to be good, but I don't want it to be better than me, you know what I mean?
It'll just be different, you know?
Bachelor historian,
you know,
Ben.
Trust
different
me,
Greg. He truly is.
He
like
will
he's
be very
different, neutral
in his own way.
Also, as of this recording, we are eagerly awaiting the last episode of Are You the One?
The last two. We have two more episodes as of this recording.
The last two episodes of Are You the One, which Emily is recapping.
That I will continue recapping until I'm blue in the face. Because I love Are You the One?
It's great.
It's great. Great show.
Oh, you're blue in the fingers from typing.
I have two blog posts up right now. I don't think I mentioned the Superstore one last time, but I have written a blog post about the comedy Superstore and how it really smartly talks about immigration and class. And I also have a blog post, 5 things you can do here at the end of the summer to wrap up your good summer times. Ooh.
Did you talk about your Los Espookies post?
I don't know, but if you didn't read my Los Espookies post, go read it and watch the show because it is wonderful. Basically, my blog posts are just me trying to get people to watch TV shows.
What is the point of a blog otherwise?
I do that with just podcasts, so it's the same technique.
I have started my 10 weeks of Spooktober project in which I watch 10 new-to-me horror movies over the course of 10 weeks leading up to October. So at this point, there will be two on the blog already. The first one was Ready or Not. The second one was Malevolent. Mary, you saw both of these movies with me.
One was better than the other. And to know which one, you gotta read.
That's true. Which one? You'll have to read and find out.
I'm excited. I, like, literally the other night, Todd and I just sat and recommended movies to Emily for, like, forever.
Horror movies.
Now it's, like, 30 weeks of Spooktober. Yeah.
Well, let me know if you want a
It goes to January.
On any of those, because I always need an excuse to watch more horror movies.
Yeah, well, my next one is going to be It. So anyone who wants in on that.
Yes. Oh, well, I'm definitely going to see that.
Yeah, I'm going to see it, too.
Well, so. If you want in on that, I'm going to go see it on Friday, and it's going to be my one for next week, so.
Okay.
Something to think about doing this weekend.
Maybe I'll see it on Friday, too. That sounds good.
I'm going to see if I can get that done, though it is my birthday weekend.
Why would you not go see a movie on your birthday weekend?
Because I have a party, and then I'm going to a concert.
During the day?
No, I guess I could go to a movie during the day.
I like going to movies during the day because it's cheaper, and
I'll probably be hungover, though.
A perfect time to go to a movie. Like, what is That's the problem true. Here?
Get to sit in the dark and eat
This
snacks.
Has been Weekend Plans Corner with Marie and Kelly.
Yeah,
true. There's always, my point is there's always time to go to a movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Never true. A bad time to I go to a movie. Unless it's too late at night because I will go to sleep.
That's where I struggle as well. Especially now that we go to the theater with the new recliner.
Oh, yeah. I'm straight up. It could be middle of the
I turn on that heat on the recliner, and then I'm like, ooh, cozy.
It has a heater?
It has
two heaters.
We got YA Book Club, too. Mary, you want to talk about YA Book Club?
Yeah, YA Book Club should be up. We have talked about the novel Warcross.
Warcross!
By Marie Lu.
Cool!
On our next episode, we have a special spooky episode.
Ooh!
Where we will be talking about the Shirley Jackson classic, We Have Always Lived in the Castle. And we will have special guests, Lisa Kroger and Melanie Anderson. They are the authors of Yay. The new quirk book, Monster, She Wrote, which takes a look at women in the horror genre. So we're very excited to have them talk with us.
That yeah, that's going to be super fun. And get us right in the mood for spooky season.
Spooktober.
Mm-hmm. Spooktober.
That's spooktober.
What's our next book, Susan?
Our next book is Nine Perfect Strangers by Leanne Moriarty. Is it Leanne or Leanne, you guys?
I think it's Leon, actually.
Whoa. Fuck. Door number three.
What a
next
twist.
Next book, I'm starting over. Our next book is Nine Perfect Strangers by Leanne Moriarty.
I mean, that's how they said it at my publishing company when we were publishing her. But
well, y'all probably know better
be
than
wrong.
I do. I just looked at it and was like, Leanne is the closest thing I've seen.
It might be wrong.
Anyway, you might know that name or one of her names like that as the author
Any pronunciation.
Of Big Little Lies.
Oh, yeah.
So, this is a different book, and it is about a novelist, again, theme, who goes to, like, a retreat type thing with some other people, I assume nine others or eight others. For a total of nine strangers. And it sounds like it might be kind of culty.
Oh,
like,
I always love a cult.
There's some weird stuff going on, but who knows what it is. But it sounds kind of culty. And I really like cults. And I really like suspense. And I'm, like, really excited about this.
It's going to be fun.
I don't want to burst anybody's bubble, but I did just buy it via Kindle. And the cover looks like the cover of Bourne.
Well, yeah, it does. I have it. It's pretty.
I will say that the cover of this book is bad. That's my professional opinion. Sorry. Sorry!
Yikes.
Hey, I didn't pick it for the cover because that would be shallow.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that's what I never do that.
Right, of course.
Why would I ever?
It's like the Bourne cover.
Why would you say that I would do that, Susan?
I don't know. I'm saying you're shallow. Leon. Moriarty.
Yeah.
So, yeah, please read along with us or listen along or however you like to take in your books.
Smell along if you want. I don't know.
That might not work.
Yeah. And on that note, you should contact us If you have anything to say, like I said earlier, our email address is thesquad@bookswaggles.com. We are on social media at BookSquadGoals, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We are a podcast. I don't know if you knew that, but
what?
I know it's like kind of crazy. I can't believe we haven't said that in all, you know, 60, however many episodes we've had. But yeah, this is actually a podcast. And
oh my God.
I know. And you can subscribe to it on any podcast app that you listen to stuff on, even Spotify, which we managed to get onto, even though Spotify is very elitist about who.
Hey, does that mean we're good? Don't piss them off now that we're finally on there.
Hey, we're on Spotify. That means we're good.
What?
But what I really wanted to say was please leave a rating and review for us to get us ranked even higher. Maybe we can even break 1,000 at some point. That'd be great. But yeah, please review 5 stars. Love us. Subscribe to us. Send us feedback. Follow us on all the social media. Yeah. That's all the things, right? Did I miss something?
No. I think you covered it.
Okay.
Besides call us at home. I mean, that's like all of it, I think.
My cell phone number is...
Yeah. Just kidding. Don't ever talk to me.